Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Griese! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
Hello, once again, this is Coach Chuck Griese, and it's another week of American Tennis. And folks, we got a lot of action coming up with the NCAA tournament. Next week, we'll have the regional playoffs this weekend at Friday and Saturday at different sites. 16 sites for the women, 16 sites for the men. You'll have four teams at each of those sites, and you will have the winner move on to Tulsa. I'm going to Tulsa next week. I'm driving it out there. I'm road tripping it with one of my very, very good friends, and I'll be out there all week and doing a bunch of scouting and reporting back to you, to all of you. But also, I'm going to be out there trying to see what I can do with the coaches. And as a coaches poll we're generating, against Snowad and these 10-point tiebreakers and things. And folks, we'll talk about that in a second here, and that's not about the program. But we will have a lot happening there on that front, I hope, in the next few months. But this is American Tennis. First of all, every Wednesday on the UR Tennis Network, the letter U, the letter R, the number 10, and the letter S Network comes to you. Thank you, J.P. Weber, CEO and new owner of the UR Tennis Network. And listen to Coach J.P. Weber's We Coach Tennis program and tune, check on his Facebook page for a lot of the hot topics. He's got over 3,000 people on that Facebook site. It's fantastic what he does, one of the best minds in tennis, and extremely passionate about our sport and preserving the heritage and the pureness of our sport. So thank you there, Coach Weber, Coach John Denise with the Florida. His Florida program is breaking all kinds of records with listeners, and what a great program. On Thursdays at 5:30, listen to his Florida program. Then also, of course, Lisa Stone, and she is the longest operator right now of We Coach Tennis site. Her Parenting Aces program comes to you every Tuesday on the UR Tennis Network at noon as well. Look at her website, on UR Tennis Network. It is called ParentingAces.com, I think, and she's got very interesting topics as well. My program's American Tennis, and I am extremely patriotic. I believe in America. I believe in American tennis. I believe in capitalism. I believe in hard work. I believe in people should not get what they do not work for. I believe that this game teaches all of this, and this game is the best game ever invented in the history of the world. It teaches young people, old people, everybody who plays it, how to deal with one-on-one situations in a sense of fairness, and how to basically learn every skill that you need when dealing in human relationships. Teaches you honesty, fairness, hard work, and all of those things that we want our children to know. And as an individual sport, I recommend it for each and every youngster and everybody coming up. I do believe greatly in team sports as well. Team tennis is something that has been successful at a lot of levels. I'm not crazy about team tennis for the best player coming out of the works. Tournaments, those things that where a player has to survival of the fittest is how we really hone the skills of our best players. Team tennis is great for participation and for people learning the skills. It's a participation activity first. I think performance, it does not develop the skill set as much as tournament tennis, but there is a place for both. We work with both, and both can be excellent. But your youngster needs to play team sports, baseball, football, basketball, soccer, anything that will help them develop the camaraderie with other people, working with other people. I really don't think it's a good idea for a player to only do individual sports. The selfishness and self-centeredness are two different things. You know, being selfish is probably an extreme, but boy, we see a lot of self-centeredness in tennis. We really do need to be teaching sportsmanship at a higher level, and it's not about rules. It's about responsibility to honoring the code, honoring the heritage of sport, our sport, and it's not done through loading up our sport with referees, folks. That's another topic here, but we're sort of over-policing our sport here, looking for fairness instead of a deeper type of sportsmanship. Every week, American Tennis comes to you at noon. Our mission is for you to stand up, speak out, say those things you need to say. My quote from Edmund Burke, all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men, good people to do nothing. And I'll tell you what, I've always looked at why coaches don't speak out. On the college ranks, here's what happens. If you're a young coach, you're just sort of glad to be in the ball game, I think, and glad to be there. You're just getting your feet wet. If you're an older coach, you're just sort of saying, hey, don't make waves. I just want to retire and get out of this and go play my golf or my tennis on my time. And a lot of times you don't make waves. And then if you're sort of middle-aged coach, what happens a lot of times, you're trying to protect your job. So you get afraid. You get afraid. I do know this as I've gotten older. You do get braver when you get older. Do you know that retirement was started, I think, in Germany? Bismarck, actually, his era, I think it was back in World War I or so, but in Germany, they started retiring the older people because basically older people are smarter, more patient, and they have less to lose. So they speak out and they say with their mind. And, you know, just think about how the older people in our country, I'm scared to death retiring. I don't know about those of you out there who are already retired. Maybe it's the greatest thing ever, but I'm scared to death that I will become complacent and not care about the issues as much. I think we need the minds of the people who have been in 30, 40, or 50 years into this sport. And we need to use them, and the wisdom of the our older people is definitely something that is needed. American Tennis, call in if you'd like to, 714-583-6853, 714-583-6853. My website is chuckcreasy.net, K-R-I-E-S-E.net. You can read some of my articles. My books are there, and you can order my books on Amazon. Coaching Tennis is probably the most thorough book of the books that I've written. Articles and my camps that are coming up. My camps will be coming up soon. They're also there. So go to chuckcreasy.net. I think that that's about enough for the introduction, folks. We've got a program today, and I'm hoping to wrap up the section on emotional or managing the pressure of competition, the emotional readiness for competition. We've been through a lot over the past 3 to 4 weeks, but I've got the finishing touch today because I'm going to talk about, you know what, folks, your feelings really don't matter on game day. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. American Tennis.
This is Coach J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. In my 30 years experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at chuckcreasy.net. That's chuckcreasy.net.
Chuck Creasy, making them in America. That's what we need to do. That's what we want to do. Every one of us has a part in trying to influence that youngster that is in our circle of influence. Our circle of concern is big, but those youngsters right in front of us, we have a chance. And folks, this sport is based on one's ability to perform under pressure. Pressure is a privilege because if you're the favorite player, you're going to have pressure, but you're the favorite player. You've worked to a certain status. Guess what? If you've worked hard and you've prepared, there's some pressure there because you have pressure of expectations after working really, really hard. And you have to learn how to manage it. So that it's a privilege. It's a privilege because of expectation. It's a privilege that you have worked hard to have. And always the person who makes the A's in the classroom has more pressure than the person who's making the C's or the B's. And they always have the pressure to continue to perform. So excellence is not an accident. You know, it is something that is worked for every day, and the pressure that goes along with it can be fun. It can be annoying, and it can be downright painful sometimes. You know, I asked my daughter, why does she get up every morning and go swimming at 5:30 in the morning and do put herself through that. You know, if on game day, you know, she doesn't lay it all on the line, well, actually she does lay it on the line. But we're having this discussion that she says it's up to the individual to decide whether or not they're going to try as hard as they can, Papa. I said, that's true, honey, but the harder you work, the harder it is to surrender. The harder you work, the more you sweat in peacetime, the less you'll bleed in war, is the old saying. But the harder you work, the more pride you're going to have in. But pressure, we need to understand something, that pressure is just part of the deal in our sport. So, you know, butterflies are going to be there. The critical thing is to get the butterflies to fly in formation. And if there are no butterflies, you don't play well. If there are too many butterflies, you don't play well. In previous programs, I've talked about the inverted U hypothesis, or the upside-down U curve, Yates inverted U hypothesis, the pressure curve. And the pressure curve has an X and Y axis, or two axes that show as pressure increases, performance increases. When there's too much, you don't play well. When there's too little, you don't play well. The key is to know how and to balance it and to learn how to keep it in that optimal state where you're a little bit nervous, but you get your butterflies to fly in formation. Scared is bad. Laid back and no pressure is bad. It has to be in the middle. I've got stories, of course, I've used. I tell youngsters often that, let's say you've been down this path, you know, this path through the woods, there's snakes in the woods, and you've got to go down this path. Now, if you just run down the path carelessly, you're going to get bit by the snakes. If you creep down and you're so afraid of moving, you're not going to move very bad, you're scared. You just have to, you've got your stick with you, and you basically are aware as you walk down the path. I've also used the analogy of being in a tippy canoe and going into the river. You don't have control of that river. That river, called the tennis match, might have rocks, boulders, it might have waterfalls, it might have every obstacle that might flip the canoe, but it also might have those smooth times and that smooth, calm water of an easy match sometimes. But you have no control over the presentation, but you must be able to manage that canoe. If you're too nervous in the canoe, you're going to flip it. If you're too relaxed in that canoe, the rapids will flip you. So you have to be able to have that medial amount of pressure. I recently talked to a baseball mom, and talking about her son is very good when there's pressure on. The kid's a laid-back kid. He's very relaxed. And I said, when the pressure mounts up, he does really well. But when the pressure is not enough, he does poorly. And I gave her the illustration of two balloons, and one on one side of the net, one on the other. And this is Coach Kyle Bailey, by the way, his analogy. And your balloon has to have the right amount of pressure in it. And the other balloon, what your goal is, to get their balloon to have a tremendous amount of pressure or too little pressure. Sometimes it's you can fake a player out a little bit and where they're not ready for the match. But that's a tough one. Your goal is to put pressure into their side, in their balloon, with physical, mental, and emotional decisions on the court. And you don't do it through intimidation. You don't do it through unsportsmanlike conduct. You don't do it through bullying tactics. But you need to, with your game and with your head and with your physical skills and your mental skills and your emotional skills, put pressure on their side of the court. Whereas you've got to keep the right amount of pressure on your side of the court. And I gave her a simple little math problem that I've used for years. I said the pressure of the situation plus the pressure you put on yourself should equal 4. So if the pressure is a 3, you only put a 1 on yourself. If the pressure is only a 1, you put a 3 on yourself. Now listen, the 2s are easy. The 2s are easy to get ready for because you'll put a 2 on yourself regardless because you're really ready. The ones that fake you out are the ones where there's not enough pressure. They're a 1. and you think I don't have to really be ready for this match, and you put a 1 on yourself, and that's only a 2. Pressure curve is not good enough, not enough pressure, and your fine motor skills won't work, and you perform poorly. The other one that fakes you out or intimidates you out is the 3. When the match is really, really hard, a lot of times you over-prepare, and you prepare at level 3, and you go onto the court 2, pumped up to play, and 3 plus 3 is 6. That's too much pressure. So try to remember those. Those are a few little helpful hints that will help you get ready for match day. But just remember this. You know, when your butterflies are flying, you've got to get them flying formation. And probably a little bit more descriptive way of putting it, I tell kids, when your rear end starts to quiver, you still have to deliver. That's maybe a little bit more descriptive way of putting that, but that's the balance we're looking for. So my topic today is feelings don't really matter on game day. Let's talk about that. So there, some years ago at Clemson, when I was there, probably in the early 90s, they brought in a sports psychologist. The guy was really, really good. And if you're listening out there, the guy they brought in, I am sorry that I don't remember your name. And if any of you have the name of this sports psychologist that came up with this topic of controllables versus uncontrollables, I'd love to give him credit over the air. But I've got to tell you that I've remembered this lesson that he gave for many, many years. But on the tennis court, and let's say you've got lots and lots of pressure, it's a very good tool to understand what you can control and what you cannot control. Thus, you have controllables versus uncontrollables. C's are UC's, he called them. All right, now, and here are the 4 T's, or the 4 things that you need to be aware of with yourself. There are the things that you see, and so it's what I see as a competitor, what I see, what I feel, what I think, and then what I do. So you see where I'm going with this. Your perception of the situation is what you see. The emotional response to the situation you see and react to is what you feel. What you think is how you process it in your mind, and then the action you take is what you do. So, but here is about your opponent. It's what he or she sees, what he or she feels, what he or she thinks, and also what he or she does. So those 4 entities, or those 4, I don't want to say emotions, but those 4 situations. Again, what your opponent sees, you know, and how they process what they see into their feelings, what they think, and what they do. So this really, really helps, and it helps at any age for a youngster to understand this. So first of all, let's go through this process of those things that you can control. And number 1, if you go through all those 8, the thing we talk about a lot on this program and coaches talk about a lot, it are the things, can we control what our opponent sees? Well, sure. And that's called our body language. The opponent sees us, they feel themselves. We see the opponent, but we feel ourselves. Now, this is critical in teaching a player, besides forehands, backhands, serves, and volleys, and physical conditioning and everything. With them managing the pressure on the tennis court, it's critical for us to teach our youngsters to control what the opponent sees, thus body language or posture. Routines between points. There's the Jim Lehrer 16-second cure. If you'll look that up on YouTube, it's a fantastic 30 or 40-minute video. It was done back in the late 80s, early 90s. Dr. Jim Lehr, L-O-E-H-R. Look up his program on the 16-second cure. But he addresses his body language, what you do between points, how you turn, you walk away. But there, to elaborate on what he talks about a little bit more, I teach my youngsters and my players to have a response for how the end of the point happens. It happens in four ways. What's my response after the opponent's good shot? What's my opponent's response after the opponent's bad shot? What is my response after my good shot? What is my response after my bad shot? And then what is my response after I win the game or after I lose the game? These are all quite different, but it's real important for the players to practice their routines at these happenings and to have a response that keeps their balance of pressure, their balloon right. And if you're lucky, you help to blow up the balloon on the other side of the court to put pressure on their side. But first of all, we can control what our opponent sees. And that's what is number one. All right, now, let's talk about some of the others that really are easy to figure out. So, again, it's what I see, what I feel, what I think, what I do, what my opponent sees, what my opponent feels, what my opponent thinks, what my opponent does. We've already said that what the opponent sees is a C. That's a controllable. That's a controllable. Now, can we control what my opponent thinks? Well, you can influence, but can you control? Really, no, you cannot control it. You don't have control over many things on the other side of the court. Actually, the only one I'm going to give away here is, I'm going to give away all the answers, but the only one you really have control over is what your opponent sees. Can you control what they think? No. You really can't. They're going to process in their own mind exactly what they see and then also what they feel. And they're going to process. Now, can you influence? Maybe with your body language, your posture and those things, you can get your opponent to sometimes think the wrong things. But really, you can't control it. You can only influence it. So therefore, also, can you control what your opponent does? No way. You can't control what they think or do. You can't control what anybody thinks or does. We'd like to be that powerful, but the essence is no. Maybe you can influence it, but my golly, think about this. Think of how during the political season people spend billions of dollars trying to influence what we think and what we do. Do they influence it? Yeah, they can influence somewhat, but they cannot control what we think or what we do. And thank God that we live in the United States of America where they don't completely control and can't control what we think or do yet. I don't know where our country is going right now, but we'll see. We hope that we always have that freedom. But on the tennis court, again, it's a controllable. You can control what your opponent sees. You cannot control what they think or what they do. So now let's go to the tricky one. Can you control what you feel? Your side. Can you control your feelings? This is my topic. If I say feelings really don't matter on game day, you know where I'm going with this. I'm saying no. You cannot control the feeling that comes your way. Feelings are like the weather. They blow into town. They blow out of town. If you could control your feelings, you would never have anxiety or hate or nervousness or any of those things that come along with competition. And remember, competition is there to ramp up your feelings to the place where you get more used to dealing with the extremes of feeling good, feeling bad, feeling in between. I tell you, sports are supposed to liven your heart and your senses. But can you control your feelings? No, you cannot control. Listen, you cannot control that feeling that comes to you. But you need to learn to what? Deal with it. So an uncontrollable beside what a person thinks or what a person does, what your opponent thinks or does, uncontrollable is what you feel. Now, can you control what your opponent feels? Well, when I do this talk with kids, I'll do something like I'll go boo, try to scare you. Wait a minute, I didn't scare you. Wow. Okay. Well, maybe I can't control your feeling. And then I'll tell a stupid joke with young kids. My favorite one usually I use, and this is so old it has whiskers and pretty corny too, is where do dogs park their cars? And of course the answer is the parking lot, and kids go, oh, and I say, no, that's not funny enough. Oh, I did not control your funny bone, did I? And you know, the illustration is really, can we influence people's feelings? Yeah, we can. And some people manipulate other people's feelings when they learn how to somewhat control them. But in the end, you cannot control someone else's feelings. That's not your, you really, and that's up to the person to deal with their feelings. So here's the four uncontrollables. Okay. What your opponent thinks, what they do, what you feel, and what they feel. Those are all uncontrollables. Think of how wrong we are when we go to getting in touch with this, and we get so emotional about someone's emotions. And let's go a step about dealing with our feelings. What do we do? Can we control what we think? Yes. Yes. We have a bad feeling. We have a negative feeling. The feeling comes to us in a way that we weren't prepared. We have to think the right thing, and then we need to do the right thing. We need to think right and do right. We need to do it the right way, and we need to do it right now. You think right, you do right, you do it right way, and you do it right now. And the point is that too often we let the feelings be paramount over what we think and what we do. And God bless every emotional person out there. I think the heart is a tremendous engine. I have been an emotional human being my whole life. I have a lot of fire in the belly still. I love it if people say, hey, thanks for being passionate about what you do. And, that's something that I believe is a great gift that God's given me. A lot of emotion. There's no motion without emotion, I often tell youngsters. You've got to put a little fire to the situation, a little fire. Have a little fire in the belly. But your feelings, you really control that feeling that comes to you. With practice, if you think the right thing and do the right thing, it tempers the negative feelings into something that is manageable and keeps the pressure gradient or the pressure curve right. So let's see what we've got here. What I cannot control, what my opponent feels, what they think, what they do, and what I feel. But I did say we could control what I think, what I do, and what my opponent sees. Now, if I carry this out, this is a very, very important point, folks. This is extremely important. If I carry out thinking the right thing, doing the right thing, but also having the right body language, controlling what my opponent sees, I always tell my players, if you do all of that right, the tennis gods, well, first of all, there are no tennis gods, but I refer to the tennis gods, to just make my players realize that there's an imaginary character out there, or there is a force that the tennis gods finally allow you to control what I see, what you yourself sees when you are playing. So if I can control what my opponent sees, I control what I think, what I do on the court, and stay with my routines to do that, the reward is, I become the constant, and I look at my opponent as the variable. And that is the trick to winning and losing. A lot of this is about the winning, and the losing strokes work better. You perform better under pressure. Now, look, if you're two levels behind somebody, it doesn't matter if you do all this, you're going to probably lose. And if you're two levels ahead of someone, it probably doesn't matter about having to do all this, you're probably going to win anyway. But if you're in the same level or the matchup is pretty close in ball striking, conditioning, and skill set, if you can control what you think, what you do, what your opponent sees, the tennis gods will allow you to control what you see. Your match day mentality will be to study the opponent. Oh, wait a minute. They can't run wide to their forehand. Wow. Wait a minute. Their mom just showed up, and they're feeling a lot of extra pressure. Wow. Wait a minute. They're limping. Whoa, wait a minute. He's getting tired. Wow, wait a minute. He's fretting about the second serve. And all of a sudden, you become the constant. They become the variable. And when you become the constant, your opponent becomes the variable. You'll see you're good, they're bad. When you're the variable and you don't know about your opponent and you treat them like they're the constant, oh, they're the higher seed, I might not be able to win today, you will see they're good and you're bad, and it quickly goes downhill. But the key to everything is in this formula about what I can control, the C's versus the UC's. And probably this is one of the better tools that I've been able to use over the years to get peak performance players to play at their better level. And physically, how many times are you going to play great, great, great under pressure? I wanted to refer back to the great Mats Wielander giving a talk a couple years back where I worked up in College Park, Maryland. And one of the youngsters said, what do you do when you're not playing well and it's a big pressure match? And he said, this is the winner of 7 Grand Slam championships. He said, I really only remember playing great physically twice on big match days. And one of those matches I lost. He said, most of the time you just manage where you're at. And he said, you play many matches throughout the match in your head, trying to observe what your opponent's doing. But he said, above all, the point he made is that on game day, you're the constant, the opponent's the variable. He said, on practice day, work on your side of the court. It's about your side of the court on practice day. But on game day, it's about the opponent's side of the court. And that is just a masterful, wonderful thing to hear from one of the greatest players of all time. So, folks, I think this about winds it up about pressure of competition. And when people say, hey, your feelings, to get in touch with your feelings, I feel this, I feel it. You know, this is like the wind that comes and goes. I think it's important to understand that acknowledging pressure is a big part of being successful. When you're really nervous and you've got butterflies galore, you got whole buckets of them, try to get them to fly in formation with your with your routines. And the emotions are a big part of the game, the physical part, the mental part, the emotional part. If the emotions aren't working well, then the mental part won't work. And the mental decisions you make of shot selection and momentum control, if that's not working and the emotion's not working, the body's going to tie up. So you really do have to overtrain to the point of being competent, either even automatically competent under pressure, and it just takes time. Get a lot of reps in with your routines. I always encourage players to about two-thirds of their practice matches, at least 80% of their practice matches should be with winning against players that are weaker than you. If you only play against players who are better than you, bad idea. It might bring your ball striking up, but you don't learn how to win. I did want to say one last thing and leave you with this thought. Confidence is different than self-esteem. And let me point out something. You know, confidence you build your entire life through. Through hard work, and then if you accomplish something, you get confidence. You get to put it in your confidence bank. The confidence that you put in your confidence bank, that's up to you to protect, defend. Nobody take that away from you because you did it. You did it. You earned it. And by golly, stick to your guns that you know that you know that you know that you can do that. And if you only did it once, you did it. And if you think it was lucky, no, you did it. No matter what the circumstances, you did it, and you did it with confidence. And that grows your whole life through. I believe self-esteem is quite different than confidence. We make the mistake of trying to build youngsters' self-esteem. Self-esteem, folks, is really something that's done either purposely or non-purposely, but it's done usually before age 6 or 7. It's about how safe, how secure, how the well-being of a youngster is when they're growing up. Usually a child with both parents at home works better with doing things and a lot of time with the youngster. And they know that they know that they know that they're safe. They know that they know that they know that everything is going to be okay. They know that they know that they know that they have unconditional love from the person who's in charge. Unconditional does not mean based on how you perform, but it's based on you know that you know that you know that the person is there for you. Now, sometimes family structure makes lower self-esteem for birth order, and I could get into this forever, but I'm just going to say this. Low self-esteem, if you don't get it before age 10, a lot of times you don't get it. You could be the most confident person in the world and feel like, hey, I could really do this, I could take on this. But there's always that doubt or an imposter syndrome back inside of you that you want to believe, but you don't really believe. Let me just say this. If you're one of these people, you know what? I'm one of these people. I work hard even at this stage in life because I still, you know, maybe, you know, you wonder from back in your childhood if you grew up on the wrong side of the tracks or maybe this was your destiny, maybe it wasn't, and things. But the self-esteem instead needs to become God-esteem. God-esteem means you do those things that are pleasing to God. You do those things that glorify God. You do those things that help you honor God, and in doing so, you get God-esteem, and you get the feeling of His pleasure. Chariots of Fire, I remember that quote so much from Eric Little when he was talking about his running, and he's talking to his sister, and he says, Jenny, I think her name was Jenny, and he said, Jenny and God made me fast, and when I run, I feel His pleasure. And that is such a powerful statement. And the confident Harold Abrams on the other side of the track, you know, he was a person who had great confidence but didn't have great self-esteem. But it was about self-esteem, esteem versus God-esteem. So chew on that one, folks. Think about that one a little bit. And we'll be back next week at noon on American Tennis. I am Coach Chuck Creasy.
Made in America. Never buy a tattooed on his slip on. Spend a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't prejudiced. He's just made in America.
process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. And we'll see you next week, folks, on American Tennis.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.